What's up, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone from MetsBlog.com and SNY.TV, and this is what is ordinarily called the MetsBlog Q&A cast, but thinking about changing it. You know, it's not that I don't like the interviews. I do. I want to still do them, but I don't want to do them all the time because there's times where I just don't, you know, like right now, they're 10-1. I don't really have a ton of questions. So, like, to do an interview just feels like a waste of time. So, I'm trying to play with some formats and different types of shows to kind of mix in and out here. Maybe I'll do a couple a week, or, you know, in this particular case, I just kind of want to riff on the state of the Mets a little bit and talk about some subjects and things that I've written about this week and kind of update them a little bit and talk a little bit about where things stand. State of the Mets actually is probably a pretty good name for the podcast and something I should talk to the producers about. But at any rate, I won't keep talking. I will just dive right in with the first topic about this awesome 10-1 Mets team. So I don't know what the Mets should do here at catcher, and I'm not even really sure they know what they want to do. I guess it comes down to whether or not Travis d'Arnaud can play through the pain in his elbow, because he's got this UCL tear that probably requires Tommy John surgery. And for a position player, you know, he's not going to be out 18 months like a pitcher, but he's a catcher, and he's had a lot of injuries in the past. You know, and he'll miss some significant time. It's he's not going to be the starting catcher for the majority of the season, that's for sure. So if he can hold out just long enough for Plawecki to come back, if they can, you know, give him some kind of pain medication or do something just so that d'Arnaud can at least run out there and play through the pain for a couple weeks while Plawecki gets his hand back in order and can get back on the field, then the Mets don't really have to do anything. That said, if d'Arnaud needs the surgery immediately and he just can't, you know, get out there, and that's understandable, if that's the case, with Plawecki gone for 2 to 3 weeks with they're saying a broken bone in his hand. My understanding is it's just a contusion, but I mean, either way, you know how injuries go. And they say 2 to 3 weeks, but it could be 6 to 8 weeks by the time he comes back. So if that's going to be the situation potentially, and at the same time d'Arnaud is pretty much out of the mix for the bulk of this season, then they got to do something. JT Realmuto is a great idea, and like, that's awesome, but he's on the DL as we speak, and the Marlins want a ton for him. They wanted a ton for him in the offseason, and right now you've got the Mets playing well in their division and desperate. So the price is only going to be more than it was back then. So I can't see that being an option. You know, I feel like the best scenario, even though it's not that exciting, is probably Miguel Montero, because he was DFA'd by the Nationals this week, and, you know, they can trade him. But, you know, if they don't, he can always reject the assignment to the minor leagues and sign a free agent deal with the Mets, which, you know, if the Nationals get wind of that being a possibility, maybe the Nationals do trade him to the Mets, even though they're rivals. Because, you know, you might as well get something for him if he's going to sign there anyway. So I think he probably is the easiest acquisition with the most experience. You know, short of that, like, Jonathan Lucroy would be awesome. But again, it's Billy Beane in the A's. Lucroy's only been there for a month. I mean, he literally signed his one-year, $6.5 million contract 30 days ago. So, you know, I'm sure the A's, who think they're going to be pretty good this year and feel like they can contend, they probably feel like, well, if we're going to make a deal for Lucroy again with a team in April that's desperate for a catcher, you know, they're going to want a lot. It's not going to be cheap, even though it seems like he should be. The A's aren't stupid, and Billy Beane certainly isn't stupid, and, you know, they're not just going to give him away to the Mets. So, again, I come back to Montero. You know, internally, it's Tomas Nido, who's a really good catching prospect and probably, you know, has a role on this team in the future. But it's just a little early, I think, to turn over the pitching staff, which is so important to the success of this team right now, to a rookie. And, you know, to go to Jose Lobaton, who's in AAA, I mean, that's fine, too. He's a 33-year-old journeyman. I mean, you know, again, not really an answer. Like, given how important the pitching staff is, you've got a former pitching coach as your manager, you've got Dave Island as his pitching coach. I mean, pitching is huge, we know that. It's the bedrock of this team. I don't want to just throw some rookie catcher back there or a journeyman. Like, I want somebody back there that they can trust and work with. And I just feel like if Pilecki and Darnell are going to be gone for at least a month or two, possibly 2 months combined, they got to make a deal for somebody. You got to bring somebody else in here that's got some kind of reputation and credibility. How much better is Montero than Lobatone? I don't know. But, you know, Montero's been around a little bit more. I think he's just got a little bit more experience. He knows New York a little bit. Or both of them, frankly. Maybe Montero and Lobatone on the big league roster, and you just kind of go with that. It's not what you hope for. It's not why you signed Lobatone. I don't think they thought they'd ever be in a situation where he was going to have to be considered as a possible starting catcher. But I think had that been the situation, they'd have just signed Lucroy back then. But, you know, it is what it is, right? And so here they are. And, again, I think it comes down to Darnell and what he's capable of doing with his body here over the next few weeks. And I think the decision they make will indicate where that is going, or vice versa. The Mets can say what they want, that it's not a big deal that Wheeler, Darnell, DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Harvey all pitched on sequential days and made, for the first time ever, 5 consecutive starts. They can blow that off and make it sound like, you know, it's great, it's a good story, but it's really more, you know, something that the fans and the media get worked up about. They could say that all day, but it matters. And I know they know it matters. And here's why it matters. It's not so much because you finally got these 5 guys in the rotation and how awesome that is, because that is pretty cool, given all that they invested to make that happen. Why it matters is that for the first time in a long time, the rotation is healthy and in order. And they've got depth. And you've got Jason Vargas, who's not even off the DL yet. And you've got Lugo and Gazelman in the bullpen capable of stepping in. And you've got this sort of very smooth, very in order, consistent, healthy rotation, which is, like I said earlier, the bedrock of the roster. And so when that happens, and you can maybe not worry about what is supposed to be the most important part of the team, you can exhale a little bit, whether you're the GM or you're the 25th guy in the roster or you're the manager or whoever else, you can exhale a little bit and focus on other things and improve in other areas and maybe not exhaust yourself and stress yourself and freak out and be searching for replacements and roster moves and who's going to make this start. We got to fly this guy from Vegas on 2 hours sleep like last year. It happened so many times. Like, the solidity, if that's a word, and structure and order and smoothness and all that of the way the rotation is operating, including pitching well, makes all the difference in the world. And you saw that in comparison to last season when things were all over the road. That's why you get 92 losses. It happens to be that they're pitching really well, and that's great. But I think it also matters that they're pitching, that they're on the field and they're pitching. That is so key. And I think, to me, these 5 guys taking the field together says to me that things are in order. And that has been something that has been lacking the last few years, even the season when they went to the World Series. There was a lot of scrambling that summer, if you remember, when John Mabry and Eric Campbell were the heart of the order, despite the hot start they had. Like, there was a lot of scrambling. And I think there's going to be less this year, as long as the rotation is in order. It gives them options to make moves. It gives them options to do nothing if they don't want to. It's just a better situation. To me, that's why it matters. So I don't necessarily think they're popping champagne and like high-fiving in private just because these 5 guys pitch back to back to back to back to back. But, you know, I do think they understand the importance of this and the significance of it, not just from, you know, what it means to the farm system and the development of their talent, but I think also what it means to the structure and the consistency and the order of the roster. And the more that's in place, I think the more they'll win. I love the salt and pepper shaker thing. I do. I think it's funny, and I know there's people that roll their eyes at it or think it's stupid or foolish or what's the point, but anything that can rally the team and make them kind of have fun and smile and keep things easy going and free and easy and just kind of having fun, I'm all for it. I mean, who cares what it is? I mean, it does kind of look a little questionable when they're doing it on the field. I think I can see where some people might wonder, what are they doing? But once you realize that it's the salt and pepper seasoning, spicy kind of thing that they're kind of playing, having fun with, that's cool. I also love the fact that it's a Todd Frazier thing, that he's really embraced it with the t-shirts. And, you know, it speaks to, I think, what a lot of us, myself, I include myself in this, you know, we're pushing for early in the off season, which was, you know, and I got sidetracked by it. I won't lie, thinking that maybe offense was more important or more solid player at third base. But, you know, initially I was arguing for, and a lot of people continue to argue, that they really needed a guy like Frazier, you know, in that locker room, someone who's been around the block. He's a veteran, but he's also very affable and, you know, lighthearted and easygoing, kind of upbeat. He's a very casual, laid-back dude. And, you know, he understands the pressures of the market. He played on the Yankees last year, was in the postseason. Like, he's just really the sweet spot of what they needed when it came to veteran leadership, which is something that this particular roster definitely was in need of. And you saw that by them going and getting Adrian Gonzalez and, you know, bringing back Jay Bruce and some of these guys. So I just think Frazier's really been a nice fit for the reasons, the exact reasons that I think a lot of people thought he would be. Brian Price, his former manager, you know, described him this exact way in an article with Joel Sherman earlier in the winter. And I think that swayed me a lot. You know, and then the more you talk to places he's played, you know, whether it was the White Sox or people with the Yankees last year, with the Reds and Bruce who played with him. You know, Jay Bruce is a good example because, like, he and Frazier weren't best friends. Like, they were friends, they were teammates, but it's not like they were, you know, in each other's weddings and, you know, the model duo in Cincinnati. And yet, you know, he raved about him. I mean, he couldn't say enough good things about Bruce prior to them, or about Frazier prior to the Mets acquiring him. So, I mean, I think it's all the more reason why bringing Frazier in, and you're seeing the benefits to that in what he does. You know, he's going to hit, he's going to do what he's going to do. He's actually looked a lot better at third base than I ever thought he was going to also, by the way. But just that ability to sort of keep everybody kind of relaxed and even keel, but also do it, you know, with a smile, I think is important, and you're seeing the benefits of that. And again, the salt and pepper shaker thing, like, whatever. It's if you're hating on that and you're getting all worked up about it, you got to take a deep breath and just enjoy the start to the season. 10-1. 10-1. It's really hard to believe it is. And, you know, I think the best part about this, and I've written this a few times this week on Mets Blog, is that it gives this team a cushion to make mistakes and slip up a little bit. They're going to have a losing streak. Somebody's going to get injured. Heck, they're dealing with it right now with the two catchers. So things are going to happen. But what 10-1 does is it allows them, as you saw, if you remember in 2015, it allows them to play mediocre baseball for June and July like they did in 15. And still make a move and still get hot and still be able to get to the postseason because, you know, they started off so well, it allowed them to sort of have that hiccup midseason. I mean, hopefully there's no hiccup and they win 100 games and it's a smooth ride, but odds of that happening are very, very little. And so when they do hit that bump in the road, this cushion that they're creating right now in April is going to let them sort of get through that and not hit the panic button, which is going to be so important considering the fact that there's so much pressure on this team, plus they have a new manager. You know, the last thing Mickey Callaway needed was to be, you know, under 500 in May and having people question whether or not he should have gotten the job and having to deal with those questions. And then it undermines his authority and the players start to, you know, disband and all that. So again, 10-1 makes it almost impossible for these guys to be in a position in May that's devastating. You know, especially over these next six games, if they can go 4-2 here against these six games at home against the Brewers and the Nationals, and they could be 14-3 when they go on that long stretch. You know, they play some pretty interesting road games, and then they have to fly from St. Louis to San Diego back to New York. That's not going to be fun to start off May. If they can, you know, be, like I said, 14-3 when they get on that plane to St. Louis, That is huge. That's, you know, 9 games over .500 as they're getting ready to make that maneuver. If they go .500 on that road trip or even a little bit under, they'll still be, you know, 7-8 games over .500 when they come back. So it's just these 6 games to me are so important given the start. I know you don't want to be greedy, but I'm being greedy because the more this cushion is, the more they can withstand later in the summer. And look, you're a Mets fan. I'm a Mets fan. Let's be honest. You know, some kind of dramatic silliness, something's going to happen in June or in July. It's just the way it is. It's baseball, but it's also the Mets, let's be honest. So, you know, the more they can win here and the more padding and the more cushion they can add, the better it's going to make dealing with that chaos, that inevitable chaos down the road. Like I said, hopefully it doesn't come, but if it does, we're going to look back on this April and say, whew, thank goodness. All right, that'll do it. That is the state of the Mets as things stand here on Friday. Oh, geez, Friday the 13th. Maybe I should have debuted a new type of podcast ranting and being all excited about 10-1 on Friday the 13th, but whatever. It is what it is. That's where we are. I love where these guys are at. It's been a fun team to watch. You know, like I said earlier, they're easygoing and just sort of relaxed, and they're playing a relaxed style, you know, and whether that's because they're 10-1 or they're 10-1 because of it, either way, it doesn't matter to me. The fact that they are doing what they're doing and they're having a good time and fans are having fun, like, that's all that matters. That's why we do this. That's why we root. That's why I write. That's why, you know, we pay attention. So the longer it goes on and the more fun it is, the better for everybody. So I'm pretty ecstatic with where things stand. Again, you can check out, you can subscribe to this podcast. You can find it at SNY.TV/podcasts. And, you know, send me some feedback on what you think of this type of episode. If you think this makes sense, you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Matthew Cerrone. You could send me an email if you got it. Whatever you got to do, just let me know. I love the feedback, and I think it's helpful. And if you have good things to say, by all means, leave feedback and commentary on the Mets Blog podcast page on iTunes would be great also. They also be aware that SNY.TV launched a new Mets podcast with Doug Williams and Andy Martino that's a lot of fun called Shea Anything. It's pretty interesting listening to them kind of, you know, play the role of fan and reporter and bounce back and forth. And it's a fun conversation. I'm really enjoying it. So you should check that out. Also, by the way, the Jets one that they do, the Jets stream is awesome. I love what's going on there. I'm a big Jets fan. I don't talk about that much, but, it's been helpful for me just to kind of listen to Jonas Schwartz and Willie Colon talk about where things stand with the Jets and what they should do at quarterback. I don't know what I want to do in that regard. So I'm pretty influenced when I listen to things like that. So, again, any feedback, send it to me. Talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening. And as always, you got to believe, and let's go Mets.